Hello, welcome, and thanks for tuning in. If you're not familiar with my work, or this is the first time perhaps you're encountering me, let me just introduce myself briefly and say that my name is Chris Durkes, and I call myself a soul interpreter. This is a word I've basically made up, but it points to the way in which I like to support people in their personal transformation. I consider myself like a translator or an interpreter. And what I interpret and listen for is the nature of each person's soul. Soul to me is a word that means the unique personal essence of someone. And I experience souls kind of like a language, like a unique coding. And so sometimes I work more as a kind of translator, interpreting on behalf of someone else and sharing information about their soul's communication to them. And then ultimately my aim is to be more something like a foreign language teacher. To me, the soul is a native language, a unique personal communication that resides at the core of each of us. And it's a language we're no longer fluent in, we're no longer familiar in. And so my interest and my passion and my desire and gifting is to help people learn the language of their own soul. In this recording specifically, I want to talk a bit about soul interpretation and soul reading for children. That is, the soul of a child. And how learning about the soul of a child can support parents and caregivers to nurture and affirm and help a child grow into their deepest self. I offer soul readings for children given to parents in order to support them in their parenting and their nurturing and affirmation of the soul of the young one or young ones who've come to be a part of our lives, for those of us who are parents, caregivers. And I want to just talk briefly about what that even means. What does it mean to talk about reading a child's soul? What's involved? Why? That kind of thing. To give everyone a clear sense of where my heart is in this, where my thoughts are and perspective and my values, why I think it's really important. So I mentioned there briefly in the intro that for me, soul, and if soul is a word that doesn't feel comfortable for some people, then you can sort of substitute it in my mind for personal essence or unique essence. The soul is the part of each of us that is radically singular, utterly irreplaceable, non-repeated. The soul is the one part of each of us, I believe, that is utterly and uniquely us and totally its own reality and not like anyone else's. That to me is a soul. And children have souls, or I guess as I would prefer to say, they are ensouled as much as adults. And therefore they deserve to, I think, have their souls seen and affirmed and appreciated and nurtured and supported as much as adults do. I said that I approach souls like a kind of a language or a code. Another metaphor I might use is like a blueprint, like a sort of fingerprint. Each soul has its own unique set of indelible markings that identify that soul, and in particular, give a sense of the soul having a kind of master template or master code. So like a blueprint. And if you can read the blueprint, say, for a building, you get the schematics and the draw out, and you can imagine what the building will look like, sort of fully constructed. And in a similar, though not perfectly parallel way, but as an analogy anyway, there's a way to sort of read the underlying unique coding of each person, and in this case specifically of children. And in that we learn a vast amount of information of what fundamentally drives this person, this child, what are the deep motivations of their heart, what are the deep sources of their gifting, what are the inherent challenges of their being, how can they best be supported, how can they best be loved, how can they best be nurtured, how can they best be affirmed in who they are, and given the proper kinds of tools that they will need in order to learn to maintain their own being and learn how to regulate their own energy, to regulate their own being, really. So when I read for children and send the information to their parents, or depending on the age of the child, some combination, if you know a child's, we're speaking of a very little one, then the reading is for the parent and can be kept. And then as the child grows up, when they're old enough, if they'd like to listen to their own recording, they certainly can. If the child, if we're talking more someone who's a preteen or even teenager, then the recording can be modified in certain parts to be directly offered to the child themselves. So, but ultimately, there's a couple key points that I want to talk about in terms of what do we learn from a reading. So I've talked about soul as the unique essence of a person. Children are ensouled as much as adults, so they similarly have such an essence and that can be read for. And when this coding, when this language of their soul, this blueprint is read, we can learn a great deal of information that can be deeply affirming and supportive of such a soul. So I want to talk a little more specifically about the precise nature of the affirmation and the precise nature of support that comes out of readings that I do for children. And the first point, one that I've been mentioning a number of times here, is affirmation. Souls in this world, I would argue, are not welcome. Not in our politics, not welcome in most relationships, not welcome necessarily in schooling systems, in business situations, in corporations and offices and jobs, social media, just kind of go down the list. It's rare to find the affirmation of our uniqueness, to be fundamentally seen and to be appreciated at the essence of our being. Otherwise, the world is built around ways that we, you know, so-and-so should be like this, or you ought to treat me this way, and I scratch your back, and you have to scratch mine, and you owe me this, and I owe you that, and it's all this kind of negotiated, conditional forms of manipulation, and in the worst case, it's exploitation, but a deep lovelessness and fear that drives much of the world. And yet, beautiful souls keep coming to be here. I hear parents often say that they saw the personality of their child right from the beginning. They looked into the eyes of their child, or perhaps you've had such an experience that you looked into the eyes of your child or a niece or a nephew or a grandchild, and you see their light. You see some spark. You see some smile, some glint, some shine. In the Middle Ages, there was a saying that the eyes were the window to the soul. The eyes are the window to the soul. And so we talk often about, especially when a child is first born, those periods of gazing, the deep gazing into the eyes. And so I'll hear parents and caregivers and family members and loved ones say, and I saw their personality right from the start. I would actually say that what we're seeing in that case is their soul. Their personality will develop. And hopefully it develops as best as any of us can in alignment with our soul, I would say. But I think when we speak of that, when you hear someone or you have your own experience of seeing that light in the eyes of a child, you're seeing their soul peeking out from behind the eyes. Their eyes have become transparent for a moment. They become windows into this otherwise elusive, beauteous, beautiful, wondrous nature that we call a soul or their essence. And this kind of a reading work is to take that basic insight and to extend it a little further. It's already something that is a part of our world, but we're starting to give language and form and structure to this intuition that I think many of us have. I think when we say that we see the soul of the child rather than their personality, we're affirming something even more deeply true of their being and of our relationship with them. So in a worldly sense, in many of the structures of the world, I would argue souls are not welcome. And yet, person to person, we have many of these experiences that speak to a seeing of a truth deeper than a lot of the superficiality of the world. And a specific reading is to support the seeing and the appreciating and the affirming of that depth in a child. So the first thing that gets affirmed is the gifting. Every soul, those of children, at least in terms of, you know, human age or adults, but here we're talking about kids. Every soul comes in with specific gifting, which is built into the nature of the unique light of each soul. And so the first thing the reading will do is affirm that gifting that you may already see very evident in the life of your child, in their spontaneous play, in the kinds of things that they're inherently drawn towards and that they explore on their own. You probably already had glimpses of this, but this helps to affirm, it helps to confirm, and it helps to give a specific window, a specific kind of way of approaching and appreciating these, again, latent insights that we often have with those of us who are deeply connected to the lives of children. For example, an example of how the affirmation of the gifting of a soul of a child can be really helpful. So in the way that I read, we read for sort of major themes that motivate a soul. And for example, one of the possibilities that I'll see from time to time is the notion that creativity is the marker and the orientation for that soul, for that child. In other words, practically what that means is their creativity, the deep draw within their soul at the level of their deepest self, the draw towards the creative process is what actually gives them a sense of purpose, mission, orientation, and alignment in life. That's not true for every soul, by the way. I mean, creativity is, in a general sense, of course, a universal human trait, I would say, and is a beautiful thing and is wonderful for any of us to express in any number of ways that we might. But some souls very specifically find who they are and what they are about and how they want to be in the world and how they can gauge and find their path and how they can even start to shape and mold and co-create their own path. How they find their alignment is actually through creativity. So creativity does not become, for such a soul then, for such a person, a kind of nice add-on to their otherwise supposedly productive or efficient life. Creativity becomes the core of expressing who they fundamentally are, learning who they are, that they do not learn who they are except by wedding themselves to the creative process. Whether that creative process is for that child more through physicality, that could be sport, that could be dance. For others, it might be music or performance art or visual arts. It could be that they're really into tech and they show creative, spontaneous intelligence in terms of design or the ability to work with their hands. They're constantly taking machines apart and building them back up. And for others, it might eventually develop more into commerce and business and the artistry of developing productive systems, leading other people. There's all kinds of ways in which that creativity could manifest. But at the soul reading level, we see that for such a person, the ability to go through the non-linear, often messy, but beautiful creative process, creativity for its own sake, beauty for its own sake, artistry for its own sake, is what allows them to feel like they finally fit in the world. It allows them to feel like all the pieces finally come together. Now, if we know that beforehand as a parent, then their creativity becomes crucial. We may think it's, in some sense, you know, kind of important, or it's good to be a well-rounded person, yada, yada. But no, in this case, if this were the case in the reading, it would be ultra, crucially integral to their deepest happiness and joy. And that could positively affect our parenting in terms of supporting the nature of that creativity as they start to express and show their preferences and their interests. And they would get to try lots of different things, and they would find some things that really connect for them, and they would get to go sort of full into them. And as they would, we would find that their energy starts to balance. Now, say in my case, creativity is not the core fundamental theme that gives me a sense of identity, purpose, alignment, mission. It's, I can be creative, I like it, but it's for me feels more relaxing and helps to get rid of stress, and, you know, just kind of fills out my life and brings humor and lightness and joy, and that's wonderful, but it's not the thing that's driving me. In my case, based on my reading, the thing that's fundamentally driving me is to communicate and advocate publicly for what I think. And no surprise, here I am recording my thoughts and you're listening to them. So you can see I'm trying to fulfill my own deepest impulses here. So when I focus on what it is that I think about something, what is it that really pulls on me and sort of turns my stomach and breaks my heart and opens my mind, and I focus on communicating and advocating publicly about what I think about that, then I find my alignment. Similarly, if that kind of a motive or that kind of a theme is driving the soul of your child, and in their reading we learn that in a similar way, communication, authentic self-expression is the key for them to be able to find their alignment, their sense of purpose, their sense of being on target, their sense of being in step with life, then that also supports the nature of the parenting, because they'll be big talkers. And then you'll need to get ready as a parent to deal with them questioning and wanting to know why, and wanting to share their opinion and having strong opinions. And if we don't know that going in, we might think that that somehow, that could easily be misinterpreted as kind of recalcitrance or problematic behavior or whatever that needs to be. And they need to kind of be quiet a bit more and listen to, you know, authority. And that could then be unintentionally squelched a bit. So the first and the most important thing that the reading offers is an affirmation of the gifting. And within that comes a very specific sense of the major themes and where the child will find their deepest sense of alignment, identity, purpose, and mission from. And that is a crucial piece of information as a parent. Again, for those who want to receive recordings, you'll maybe have already known some of these things, but it will confirm it, or in some cases it will be a blinding flash of illumination, perhaps. But either way, the reading will affirm the gifting, the unique strengths of the soul, and where specifically those strengths will lead in terms of identity, purpose, and mission. The second major theme or topic that gets covered in the reading is the inherent challenges. This is sort of the flip side of number one. So every soul comes with its inherent lights, and with those inherent lights come inherent shadows. So it's a sort of classic symbolic kind of idea that the gift can be the curse, or the greatest strength can be the hero's greatest weakness. You know, you've seen this in movies and comic books and all these kinds of things. So every soul, based on the nature of its specific profile, has built-in intrinsic strengths and built-in inherent vulnerabilities and challenges. And that's baked into the cake. And they go together. They're always intertwined. So we can never get rid of the inherent challenges or vulnerabilities for each of us at the level of our soul, because they're intimately tied to the strengths. And if we got rid of the vulnerabilities, we would lose our strengths. And this is the same for children. And this part is underappreciated in my experience, and I really want to emphasize it, because most of my work with individuals is with adults. And basically what we're doing in a lot of our work is undoing a lot of the programming and the coping strategies that they have built up over a lifetime unconsciously to deal with the inherent challenges of their soul. So their souls were maybe not as fully affirmed as would have been, you know, ideal, or in some cases were deeply, radically hurt and wounded and unseen and even criticized and negated. And as a consequence, whether that was of a milder or a more extreme form, that child growing into their adolescence and adulthood developed a series of coping strategies to try to cover over the inherent vulnerabilities of their soul. This is my outlook anyway. And then they find, whether it's a midlife crisis or a quarter life crisis or some initiation or some crisis, whether it's initiated by the death of a parent or the death of a loved one or an illness or a divorce or a breakup or job loss or something, or just that they've started to feel the pull into their own being, and as a consequence they've come up against all this kind of architecture, all these contraptions psychically that they've built up, all this armor to try to defend them, but they find that what used to be a coping strategy has now become counterproductive. It's actually preventing them from living their deepest gifting and their deepest joy and their deepest love and compassion in this world. And so in the work with adults, we have to kind of deconstruct, we have to undo and dismantle a whole series of these kind of mousetraps, these contraptions that have been built up inside the person, so that they can develop a different set of healthy, conscious, intelligent practices to deal with the inherent vulnerabilities of their soul. So there was a genuine insight there. There are inherent vulnerabilities, inherent weak spots, inherent blind spots, inherent challenges to each of us that are unique to the nature of our soul. And those do need to be dealt with. But how we deal with them makes a huge difference. We will deal with them. There is no doubt about that. You have dealt with them. Your children will deal with them. It's a guarantee. What is up for debate, what is an option, is whether we develop healthy, conscious practices that are specifically supported and specifically attuned to the nature of our soul, or we develop unhealthy, destructive coping strategies, which later in life will reveal themselves as various kinds of self-sabotage, self-defeat, addiction, suffering of one kind or another. And what I really appreciate about reading for children is the possibility of emphasizing very strongly the kinds of practices that can be established early on in their life that are healthy, constructive, help them deal with the inherent challenges and vulnerabilities of their soul, but in a way that is actually very, very aligned, very congruent, very wholesome to their being, rather than leaving that to be a kind of unconscious shadow set of programming that they will develop that later in life they'll have to either try to undo and redo, or they will just spend a life kind of, a lot of people live, you know, the famous line of quiet lives of desperation. They're unwilling to face their coping strategies, and they are under-resourced or don't feel ready to, or don't have the language of how to deal with the inherent challenges of their soul. And that's tragic. That's really heartbreaking. So, soul readings for children, one of my deep values about it, why it really matters to me and why I offer it, is the possibility that that doesn't need to be done. We don't have to wait till we're in our whatever 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, whatever, to try to undo all these kind of mistakes and then kind of develop a different way of being that's more aligned to our essence. We can just actually, from the beginning, create these kinds of practices that are life-giving and supportive for us. And that creates a far more resilient, a far more resourced, a far more joyous being. So let me use an example. A child whose soul, whose being is really big-hearted. The kind of kid who is on the playground and hears another child somewhere on the other side of the playground fall down and scrape their knee and start crying. And that child's energy and awareness immediately goes to the other child to see if one of the adults is going to come over and take care of them, to see if the kid's going to be okay. The child who starts deeply sobbing and weeping when watching a movie, and in the movie someone dies or a grandparent dies or something, and they just start openly grieving. Who feels profoundly the joys and the sorrows of this world. That kind of a child has incredible gifts and a very specific set of challenges. And notice again that the gifts and the challenges are two sides of the same coin. That kind of child, there are very specific practices for them to learn to contain, which is not to repress, not to try to force it down, but also not to lose themselves, right? Because with that kind of big-heartedness, with that really profound empathy that's built into who they are, they have the potential to sacrifice themselves, take on other people's pain, give themselves away, get taken advantage of by other people because of their inherent innocence and goodness and care. Those are the challenges. Those are the potential, as you can well imagine, susceptibilities with such a specific energy profile. And then there are specific practices that can help to clarify that. So the reading will be very clear. Their life will also show you when they have that kind of an energy. And there are specific practices that can be done that don't require them to shut down, but also they don't need to be taking on other people's pain. They don't need to be sacrificing themselves. They can learn how to relate from their own wholeness. They can learn how to stay in their own resilience. They can learn how to stay in their own lane. They can learn how to have their own pure, clean, pristine, strong, emotional, energetic boundaries. They learn how to get to be a loving and healing presence in the world. Not that they're supposed to fix everybody's pain or take other people's pain on. And they can learn that very early on. The practices obviously need to be sort of tempered for their age. Are we talking about a 4-year-old? Are we talking about a 10-year-old? Are we talking about a 16-year-old? But it's the same basic principle. And that kind of a practice, specifically tailored to the unique set of challenges for that child, is immensely powerful and immensely beneficial in their life. So those are the two main topics that we cover: the gifting and the inherent challenges, how to support both sides, how to support the gifting, and how to build healthy foundations and healthy practices that help cover our blind spots that each of us have, so that the strengths, the gifts of our being, can be much more free-flowing. The reading, as I said, is focused for parents, because the primary form of how this really gets transmitted is by the parents. There are tools and there are techniques and there are practices and things which are important, but ultimately, the affirmation of the soul and learning a way of being for each child that is aligned to who they are really comes by the parent being able to see and to appreciate and name very specifically the qualities that they see, the deep motive impulses, the deep motivations and forces that are driving a child's soul, and to see very specifically the precise kinds of pains and vulnerabilities and specific kinds of situations that are very tender and even can sting for them based on their profile. Like in the example with the really big-hearted child. There are very easy practices to say, did you feel really sad for that other child? Do you know that they're going to be okay? Do you feel scared if they start crying? Or do you just feel really sad? These are precise moments that you can start to chart how they're relating to their own energy. It's really an amazing thing. So the reading is there to affirm and to support the incredible soul work, the incredible calling of being a parent or caregiver. There's no way in which I want to come down as a, you're not doing right. There's enough mommy wars and parent wars and horrible shame-based tendencies out in the world. This is an affirmation-based process. There are so many aspects of a child's well-being that those of us who are involved in their lives are asked to attend to. At the time of the recording, you know, I'm the father of a 3.5-year-old daughter at this point, and one on the way, and I've done her reading, and it has consciously and consistently supported me and informed me and guided me in my parenting. But there's, you know, we have to care for their physical well-being and their emotional well-being and their mental well-being and development and, you know, friendships and wider family connections. And so there's so many areas to focus on: schooling, education as they get older, so many areas. And in the midst of that, their souls can be kind of left out a bit, because there's so many other demands and requirements on our being. And it helps to have something that is clearly focused on this very deep, very powerful domain of the being of your child, and to affirm your role as a parent in the guidance, the nurturance, and the support of their soul. On my website, there's plenty of information about how you can get a hold of me and what's all involved in a soul reading for a child. If you're interested, please look there. They are wonderful options as baby shower gifts. There's all these opportunities: birthdays, Christmas, etc. There are any number of moments in life where we are celebrating and gifting children. And so whether it's on behalf of your own child, or if you're a grandparent or an auntie or an uncle or a friend of the family, this is, you know, an offering, an option that is here to affirm the nature, the souls of children, and to support parents in their really beautiful role of guidance So the last thing I want to say is a practice, a very simple practice from a kind of soul perspective, a soulful perspective of parenting. This is something you can, maybe it's already something you do and this affirms that, or it's maybe something new that you haven't encountered before and it might be a fun practice to try out. In soul work, there's this idea that the soul of a child has chosen their parents before they were born. You could take that pretty literally. You could take that statement more figuratively, metaphorically, symbolically, as if. I'm fine with whatever way that is true for you. I'm not here to impose a bunch of ways of thinking that you must hold. But I like this idea. I find there is some deep rightness about it for me. I'm not entirely sure how exactly I think it's right, the mechanics of it, but the underlying kind of core principle of it strikes me as deeply sound, that the soul of a child has in some significant way chosen those of us who are their parents and have chosen us for a reason. And the practice, therefore, grows from that insight, which is to thank them, to explicitly thank them for choosing us to be their parents. And that's something my wife and I have been practicing with our daughter and will be doing with our yet to be born child, or even are doing while the child is in the womb. Whether they're a baby, an infant, and you're speaking to them, or they're a toddler asleep, or they're just starting to get their words, or they're 8 years old, 9 years old, 11 years old, 13 years old. Just look at your child, your children, and say, thank you for choosing me to be your mom or your dad or your parent. Thanks for choosing me. I honor your choice and I love you. It's a really beautiful way of acknowledging, you know, as parents, there's a natural kind of, obviously, power differential. But for a moment, it kind of flips it. And they have chosen us. And they are more directive. And for a moment, we as the adults are more receiving of their choice. We may have longed for them. We may have prayed for them. We may have called out for them or desired them for many years. But to acknowledge their choice in their own incarnation, to appreciate that they have chosen to be born in this time and place, and that they have chosen us to be their bond, their guide and support in this world, to affirm that choice of their being, to affirm their incarnation as a soul, is a very simple but powerful practice that cultivates a soul-to-soul bond in the family. So I appreciate your time. I hope that practice, you find it fruitful and beautiful like I do. I hope this recording has been helpful to give a kind of a picture of the value, I believe, of affirming the souls of children and a specific way to go about doing that. And as I said, if you're interested in more information, there's plenty on my website. And please reach out. And for those who feel really moved to do so, it's an honor for me to read for anyone. It's a especially sweet honor for me to read for children and to support families in that way. So if you feel so called and choose to do so, I thank you in advance. And I wish all of you and all your families much love, joy, and peace. Thanks for listening. Bye.